Okay, welcome everybody to this evening's teleseminar called How to Uncover Your Own Sacred Quest. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to be your host this evening. In a very short moment from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Louise Langley, author of The Sacred Quest. But before I do that, I just thought I'd spend a little bit of time up front just letting you know how this call will run this evening, particularly if you haven't been on one of our PeopleYouShouldMeet.com calls before. Now, the whole idea behind People You Should Meet is that each week I interview someone who I believe is doing remarkable things in the world. And I invite my friends on my subscriber list to join the call. And people actually submit their questions on the topic that we discuss. And over the course of the call, I do my best to weave in the questions and also the themes that came through the questions of our experts that appear each week. And this call is an international call. We've had people signing in from all over the world. So wherever you are calling in from this evening, I'd like to welcome you to the call. Now, Louise and I very new friends. We've only really just known each other for a very short time, but in the space with which we've known each other, we've just hit it off and we've become very close friends very quickly. So it is great pleasure for me to welcome her to the call this evening, so we can talk about the whole idea of the Sacred Quest. Welcome, Louise.
Thank you. Hello.
Now, Louise, our connecting actually was through a whole series of synchronistic events, and I guess with the Sacred Quest, I think being on that kind of path, it does open you up to synchronicity. But I was just wondering, to start the call off, if you could actually share your own interpretation of what a Sacred Quest actually is.
Yeah, sure. For me, it all began 2 years ago. And I would say that your sacred quest begins within, for a start. It's that moment when you realise that your heart is so completely out of kilter with your head. It's the moment when you may find that you are in a very traumatic position, you feel incredibly wretched, or you suddenly have a moment of inspiration which almost seems to remove you from the reality and everything that you're surrounded by in that moment and bring you to a place where you're almost looking outside of your body, looking back at yourself and thinking, who is this person? What's happening? What am I here for? It's that turning moment, and we know that, you know, there is only the moment of now. So it's that point where it begins. And from then on in, there is only one way to facilitate having a sacred quest, and that is to absolutely and utterly trust. Trust your heart and don't listen to your head. If you listen to your head, your quest can't begin. So the first point is to actually recognize the moment and surrender in the moment to everything that you're feeling and to embrace that moment for the beauty of the moment that it is. And from that moment to then trust implicitly everything that your heart is telling you, and not what society or convention would tell you, not what your head is telling you to do. As you start to follow your heart, you begin to notice synchronicities and synergies around you, people that you meet, numbers, all sorts of things. Do you want me to tell you a little bit about how it started for me?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so in the summer of 2006, I found myself, as so many people on the planet would empathise with, in a position where I'd actually been married for some time. I had three young children, and I had known deep within me for some time that I was somewhere where I shouldn't be. And I found myself on a weekend in Ireland with friends. And I had a turning point in that moment, in a moment on that weekend in Ireland, when I absolutely knew that I could not stay in this marriage anymore, that it would be a disservice to myself, to the man I was married to my children. But moreover, it was my soul that was absolutely screaming at me, although I didn't realize, I had no notion of any of that prior to that moment. And I threw myself in a corner, threw my head in my hands and pleaded with all my soul for things to happen. Well, actually, to be specific, for a man that I'd seen walking in and out of my dreams for the previous 4 years or so. And within less than 2 hours, this man, who was very unusual looking, showed up. We had 20 minutes together on the streets of Dublin, as you do at 2 o'clock in the morning, where actually the only reason I walked out of that bar was my head was screaming at me not to, and my heart was saying, go out there and follow that. That's the first time in my life I've implicitly, utterly, without hesitation, followed my intuition. Having said that, I've come from a very like trading-oriented background, and obviously there's the work intuition, and that's quite an interesting one because people intuitively do follow their heart if they're in that situation. They seem to forget it the minute they walk out of the trading room or something. They're back to being in their head again.
Yeah.
Anyway, so at that moment I went outside. We had 20 minutes together. We both realised that we'd had what seemed lifetimes and lifetimes together, and I couldn't fathom what was going on. And then we were quite traumatically pulled apart with no way of contacting each other. I came back to England and just hold myself away from everyone and everything, and remarkable things started to happen. So, for example, I was walking to rooms and blow light bulbs and TVs and anything electrical, all circuits would go off around me. I'd have trails of, like I'd open the back door and have a trail of over 300 white feathers laid in a path down the garden for me. I'd stand at night and say, who and what am I? And the sky would blaze white for like 20 seconds or more. And if I asked again, the same thing would happen. I started to feel energy around me, and I couldn't really understand what it was. And then all sorts of synchronicities and synergies started to unfold. And all the way through this, I just locked myself away from everybody. I could not deal with the world or anybody around me at this point in time. I'm sure lots of people would relate to finding themselves in that situation. And that's the moment at which, if you completely surrender and you listen to what your heart is telling you, that's the moment where your quest can begin. And for me, that's certainly where it began. And I found myself, through the course of the summer, having all sorts of things unfold which were just extraordinary, both for me and everybody around me, who were quite literally on their knees when they were as they were watching what was unfolding, really. And 3 months later, having made the decision immediately coming back from Dublin that I was going to separate with my husband at the time, but intent on doing it in a way that was loving and for the children, I then found myself waking up one night, actually at 11:11, with the bones of a story coming into my mind. And as I got up and I went downstairs and I began to write, and I just lit a candle and I wrote through the night, I just wrote and wrote and wrote just everything that was coming from my heart, from not in my brain, but it was as if it was coming through my head. I was just writing endlessly, having no idea what was pouring out on the paper. And when I got to the end and put my pen down, it was actually 5:55. And now I understand the significance of the numbers. But I sat back and looked at what I'd written, the bones of what I'd written, and half the terminology I'd written I'd never heard of, had no idea what it meant. And But the story itself was just amazing, and I kind of looked at it and thought, well, where has this all come from? I have no idea. And in much the same way that the story had come, I kind of understood that I was the main character of this story, and that this book was to be written in the form of a novel. And so I just sat with it, really, and had this bones of this story. And then literally from the following day, every day that passed by, this story, of which I had only written the bones at that point in time, started to become my reality. It started to quite literally manifest into reality around me.
Wow.
Now, that for me was another turning point, another point in the sacred quest, because it's so many of us, I don't know how many times, you know, you wake up, you get an idea, and suddenly this idea will come through you, and you'll think, that's completely crazy, just put that to one side, that's madness, what's that all about? But don't ever do that. Because actually, that's inspiration, and that's you, and that's you telling you that this is the moment for you to embrace and listen to who you are and the beauty of all that you are and what it is that you've brought here as your purpose for who and what you are to come to the world. And if you can just touch that and embrace it, embrace the beauty and the truth and the integrity of what that is, and do not dismiss it as your head would have you do, and just keep allowing that information to come through you, you will be staggered at what unfolds. Because without going into the whole story, all I will say is that what happened from that point is people, places and events began to come forward, step forward and validate everything that I was writing, things that I had no idea about. I was receiving scientific information which had quantum physicists with their jaws on the floor asking me where I was getting that from, and I had no idea. I was picking up scientific reports and disputing them. Now, my head would say, you know, you're a raving lunatic. You didn't even like science at school. What are you doing disputing a scientific report? And yet my heart knew it was the truth.
Yeah.
So in essence, I guess what I'm trying to say is a sacred quest is the quest for you. It's the quest to embrace the beauty of who you are. And, you know, the quest is not an external quest. It's an internal quest. Because once you start to truly connect with who you are, you begin to love yourself. And when you love yourself, this is not to do with ego or personality. This is completely outside of this. When you love the true essence of who you are, then miracles begin to unfold. And that, in essence, is a sacred quest.
That is amazing, and a very, very apt description of it. Now, Louise, I'm very curious. I guess the whole process of actually writing things down on paper and seeing them manifest in your external reality. But one thing I was curious about was, like, you've come from a corporate background, a trading banking background,
mm-hmm.
and I was just wondering, like, had you ever harboured aspirations of opening up to your creative side through your writing prior to that moment?
No, not at all, not at all. Prior to that, I won't deny that I'd had experiences through my life which I'd shelved and put to one side, not really understanding what they were and thinking, oh no, you know, my brain telling me, you know, don't be silly, you can't have just experienced that. I've never harbored a desire to write, ever, never. And in fact, even when this kind of bones of this story came to me, I was thinking, well, you know, what's this about? I don't want to write a book. What's this all about? Take the book away. And then it soon became apparent that, no, you're writing a book. Because I was, and as I started to write it, it was like my entire being was alight with passion. It was so infused with what was coming through. And the more that I wrote, the more that the book is very raw, well, as you know, because you've read it now, it's
yeah.
a very raw, it's not written in a traditional literary etiquette in any way, shape or form. It's the raw essence and emotion of the truth of life. It's and that is that's our abundant birthright. That's what we all have the right to experience. We're not here to experience the stuff that society conditions us to experience. We're here to experience the beauty of what it is that we've come here to be. And so for me, I had no idea what I was going to write. But as I started to write, I became so alive and so impassioned. And yes, I was wretched. And yes, I was high and in love with the world and wretched at the same moment. And I've been through a roller coaster, and I continue to be through. But now I understand that that's the beauty of life. And for me, I guess I knew that writing, as this was progressing, I knew that this was part, an intrinsic part of my purpose, because of the way that it made me feel at one with everything and at one with me.
That is amazing. Now, I've spent literally the last 2 days digging deep into the book, and as soon as I picked it up, I haven't been able to put it down. And it was very interesting that you mentioned just before that that the book doesn't really hold to traditional literary etiquette. And for me, as a reader, that was one of the most refreshing things I actually found about the book, that you really did speak from your heart and really put a lot of yourself into the words. And it's very, very apparent and very touching, as I guess from my point of view, just reading through the book as a reader. And I was just wondering, with moving from a position of your mind into your heart, again, like coming from the background that you've come from, that would have been quite a radical thing to unfold as well. And I was just wondering how the people standing around in your life actually responded to your change of just change of operating and actually taking that path, that sacred quest?
Yeah, that's huge. We could talk for hours on this. Okay. I had a huge reaction around me. I found myself incredibly isolated. And I have to start by saying I am blessed with one of the most beautiful families I could possibly have. And yet you can imagine they have somebody who they love dearly, who they watch withdraw from the world, start to claim that they are experiencing all of the stuff, things that, you know, traditionally people would have you locked away for. For me, I found myself very emotionally detached from everybody and everything, as if I were watching everything from the perspective of sitting in a cinema or watching a TV movie or something. And that was quite challenging to actually, because they felt that they were losing me, and at the same time, they felt that I was going crazy. And equally, there was this girl who'd been exceptionally grounded and highly successful, you know, real city high flyer, et cetera, et cetera. You know, mother of three kids, beautiful marriage, huge house, you know, loads of money. What on earth is she doing? Why on earth would she want to walk away from all of this? Equally, children at school, you know, all the parents, they were all looking at me as if to say, you know, well, you know, what's wrong with you? You've got a guy who's really lovely. Who's your husband? And he was a really lovely, or he is a really lovely guy. You know, he's, you know, you've got money coming out of your ears. What are you doing?
Mm.
But, you know, that's the external reality, and the external reality is not the truth. It's so far removed from the truth. And we create a greater external reality for us to experience the complete flip side at the moment, to come back to a place of understanding who and what we are. So, to step away from your head and to follow your heart is just about trust, and it's a huge, huge leap. It's like standing at the edge of a precipice and jumping off, because everybody around you will be wanting you to follow your head, because when you follow your head, you abide to rules, you abide to what society and convention expect of you. However, 2 years down the line, I can tell you now categorically that some of the people who were the most outraged, the most objectionable to what was happening, have been so flawed and are some of the people that are supporting me beyond measure right now.
Wow.
It's really very, very moving. I mean, for example, there was I was in Rome with a girlfriend of mine, and I had a very, very moving experience, which you've read about in the book. And it actually caused us to have a huge, disagreement. we didn't argue, but we had such a divide between us because of what I was going through and where I was at. And she just said, I love you dearly, but I just can't be near you anymore. And it was very, very painful for me to walk away from that. But I had to, because I had to be true to me and what I absolutely knew was unfolding for me and what I knew my truth to be. And as you know, we've talked about a lot, you know, there is only one truth, and that is the truth that's within you. There is no truth outside. There's no external truth. The truth is only the truth that's within. And now, you know, within a year, she was holding me saying, I'm just staggered. I am so in awe. Just teach me everything you can teach me.
Wow.
And for me, I wept, because to actually have somebody who I loved so dearly, who was so vehemently opposed to where I was at, to come full circle and say, teach me, was really quite something.
Yeah, that's stunning. And they often do say that great minds or great ideas often experience fierce opposition in the initial stages before, I suppose it takes time for ideas to calibrate into other people. And some people do then move and understand it at a later date. Some people never do. But it must certainly like a credit to you as a human being to be able to stand in the opposition of people who you really care about and stay true to who you are.
If you think about it, Damien, there are so many examples across the notion of history, the notion of time and space, where people have stood in their truth. You know, look at Galileo in 1616. He stood in his truth when, you know, the whole world was saying, you're a raving lunatic. And he would not walk away from what he knew to be truth, which was he was purporting that the world was round. And yet, scientific fact proved it to be the case later, years later. If you listen to Einstein didn't know these things. He had a question, he put it out to the universe, his greater self, and he allowed it to come in. Socrates was dying, pleading the immortality of the soul in the Phaedo. His friends were pleading with him to give it up, save his life. Why would a man like that not give it up and not save his life? Because they absolutely knew the truth was something that they knew within them. And the truth is something that we all know within us. And we know all too well there is no separation. There is only the one universal mind, the oneness. Science has proven that in every way that there is possible to prove that there is no, the notion of time doesn't exist, that, you know, that there is no separation. We've just created this, like, for this game of life to play. So, yeah. You know, if you can accept that you're playing a game of life, then you can accept that the truth that is in you is just so amazing that when you tap into it, absolutely everything and anything is possible for you to know, for you to experience.
Wow. Now, Louise, I have no doubt there are people on this call who are sitting there thinking, you know, do I need to have any level of special talents or gifts to be able to start moving in a direction of my own personal truth? And I was just wondering, like, do you actually need special talent to walk this path?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Quite the opposite. the truth, what would the external world have you feel? They would have you feel that, you know, everything is complex. Look at the examinations that are set up for poor children to go through and all sorts of stuff like this. It's craziness. We're so in our heads. We need to just come away from our heads and come back to our heart. And the truth of the heart is so simple. It's as simple as this. You just trust. Follow your intuition. Now, you know, in many places where I've spoken, people say, oh, well, okay, how do I know that my intuition is right? And the first rule is don't question your intuition. Absolutely trust it, because believe me, it might take you along a path where you think, oh my God, this is crazy, this cannot be right. You find yourself in a situation where you think, oh, this is horrendous. I would question you and say, why do you think this is horrendous? That's because society has conditioned you to believe that a particular perception is horrendous and a particular perception is beautiful. But hey, what if there is no right or wrong, or there's no good or bad, there's no ugly, or something is not ugly or beautiful? There is just experience. You know, you can't know what hot is unless you know what cold is. You can't know what light is unless you know what dark is. So how can you experience love if you are not able to experience what it's like to be out of love? So all that society and convention does is it throws complex structures and notions for you to adhere to try and create the concept that you are being controlled by an external force, and that you need to be of a certain standing, a certain ability to warrant or to deserve the beauty of life. That's complete rubbish, because the beauty of life is the simplicity of absolute love and embracing of everything that you experience in every moment, in every day. I mean, you know, Damien, you were discussing with me that moment when you felt so horrendous, and then the next moment you look at a drop of dew on a leaf and it's the most magnificent thing that you've ever seen.
It's
polarity. You know, you can't experience one without the other, and that's not about having academic qualification. That's about you being completely aligned and in touch with your heart and living life, because we've created this game of life for us to live. It's here for us to have. If we were living an existence, which is what society would have you think is perfect existence, which is okay, let's have balance here, let's have structure, let's not have, let's have loads of money. Or what is that giving you? What's that bringing you? It's not bringing you any experience. All it's doing is bringing you an existence. There's no experience in that. The experience and the beauty of life is in touching all extremes, all polarities. And that is not, it's actually easier for the person who's not vaguely interested in being connected with their brain to step into that role.
Yeah.
But anyone who is completely in their head has always had their heart screaming at them to move away from there. They've just not recognised the moment.
Yeah. One of the terms that I like to use to describe that notion is the whole concept of flatlining, where conventional society will lead you to believe that the ideal is to literally be able to cruise through life at that equilibrium or that middle level without really experiencing the lows of life. And I suppose by virtue of not actually understanding what the lows are, like, you never actually get to experience the highs. But I think the people that I find who are most alive are the ones that embrace the spectrum of life and really allow all the extremes of emotion to come through and to honour and be grateful for all of it.
You know, so many philosophers have written about this. Can I just read for a moment something that Socrates said?
Sure, yeah, go for it.
It's something that really, really touched me, and I've actually written it in my book. I was so moved by Socrates because here was a man, you know, a great philosopher who was absolutely persecuted and ridiculed for his beliefs. And yet if you listen to what he's saying something that is, it's about the simplicity of life. He says, we do not realize that we live in the hollows, but we assume we are living on top of the earth. Imagine someone living in the depths of the sea. He might think that he was living on the surface and seeing the sun and the other heavenly bodies through the water. He might think that the sea was the sky. He might be so sluggish and feeble that he had never reached the top of the sea into this world of ours and seen for himself, or even heard from someone who had seen, how much purer and more beautiful it is than the one in which his people live. Now we are in just the same position. Although we live in a hollow of the earth, we assume that we are living on the surface, and we call the air heaven as though this were the heaven through which the stars move. But the truth of the matter is the same. We are too feeble and sluggish to make our way out and to the upper limit of the air. If someone could reach to the summit or grow wings and fly aloft, he would reach to the world above. And if his nature was strong enough to keep looking, he would recognize that this is the true heaven and the true light and the true earth. There you have it, one of the greatest philosopher's words. What he is saying as clearly as anything is that, you know, the feebleness and the sluggishness that he talks about, that is us being stuck in our brain. You know, the beauty of life is the experience of life. It's experiencing every extreme of life and embracing it and knowing that when you have the pain, the deeper the pain, the more beautiful the extreme you're going to experience on the other side of that. You can't do that if you're locked in your head. If you're locked in your head will tell you it will not allow you to go down that route. It will tell you not to go there, because pain is bad. Pain is not bad. Pain is magnificent.
Yeah.
Pain is the path to allowing you to love.
Yeah. That's one of my friends actually used to quote, I think it may have been Arnold Schwarzenegger, constantly when I was growing up as a kid, but he'd always say pain is a vitamin whenever things weren't going well for him. And just like, I really like that notion that you can just bring everything and use it to propel you to where you need to be in the world.
Yeah.
Now, Louise, we had a whole stream of incredible questions that came in from people when they were signing up for the call, and I'm just going to select some questions as we go along here.
Damien, may I say one more thing before you
yeah,
ask
sure.
me a question? Sorry, interrupting. I just want to say one more thing, and that is this.
Yes.
Scientists, you might have guessed by now, I'm fascinated with science, but scientists are always completely obsessed with the first few fractions of the moment the universe was born. You have quantum physicists looking at the structure and the zero-point energy field and what we're made of, and they have proven beyond doubt that, yeah, parallel realities exist through the quantum field. They've taken buckyballs, which is a collection of atoms the size of which would start to relate to human anatomy, and they've put them through the quantum field and proven beyond doubt that that buckyball will go off and experience many parallel lives at the same moment and end up in the same place at the end. Science has also proven, and then you have neuroscientists that are absolutely just hell-bent on determining what mathematical equation is it that actually is the construct of the brain and makes the brain work and makes the brain tick. And they are so completely obsessed with how does the brain construct all thought, all matter, all action of the human being. But, you know, there you have HeartMath out in them. They're based out in the States. And they have proven, beyond scientific doubt, that over 93% of the stimuli that the brain responds to is directly from the heart. Which means...
93%.
Over 93%. Less than 7% of the stimuli that the brain responds to is from anywhere but the heart.
That is phenomenal.
So given that we know that our thoughts create our reality, we now understand that it's not our thoughts, it's our heart that's creating our reality. Over 93% of our reality is created purely, without question, by our heart.
Wow, that's really...
So there's proof, if ever you wanted to follow your brain.
Great.
Sorry,
now, we have a question from... Yeah, we have a question from Mary in the United Kingdom, and Mary's question was, can you do it by yourself? Can you actually go on a sacred quest by yourself?
Okay. This is a beautiful question. And I would like to say to Mary, you absolutely have to do it by yourself, because you, first of all, when you begin your sacred quest, you're actually on the quest for the sacred union. And the sacred union is about the union of you. It's about bringing you into a place of absolute balance and union within you. Now, when I say balance, having just told you not to live a life of balance, what I mean by this is that we are all very good at saying, okay, these are the bits of me that I love, and these are the bits of the world that I love, and these are the bits of me that I don't like, and these are the bits of the world that I really don't love. But hey, guess what? They're all you. And actually, until you love and embrace every part of that, you cannot become whole. And until you become whole, you cannot be in a union of balance or of wholeness with anybody else. So the sacred quest is about coming into wholeness. It's about you embracing and loving every part that is you and every part of your experience of the world. So you'll probably notice, and I can tell you from my experience of what's happened for me, is all these synchronicities and synergies have unfolded. I meet people on a trail who continually sit in front of me and reflect back to me the next part of me that it is I'm to embrace of myself. And let me say as well, right now, I'd like to say, any person who purports to be a guru who tells you they've learned it all, they're here with nothing to learn, they've just come back to teach, that's rubbish. They wouldn't be here. No one is here. Nobody is here without things to experience and things to embrace and things to bring themselves back into wholeness. That's the whole point of being here, is to live life and experience that. So everybody that you meet, every person you come across, every experience you have is about the union of you. And that is the sacred quest. And when you finally can come to a place where you feel whole again, that's the moment in which it transcends just you and becomes more of an experience with others around you. So to Mary, absolutely, you do it on your own. You have to do it on your own.
Well, that's really good. Now we have a question from Vassi, and Vassi's in Australia. And this is, from week to week, a question that I see pop up quite regularly, or the theme of the question pops up quite regularly. And Vassi asks, how do you overcome fear and guilt and not feeling worthy?
Okay. Well, Vassi, this is exactly where I started, as you probably understood now. Okay, let me start by telling you what fear is. Fear is false evidence appearing real. Fear is a construct of the brain. It is not a construct of the heart. You might consider it's from the heart, but it's not the heart at all. The heart is delighted in embracing any extreme of emotion. And actually, if you put yourself in a position where you remember something that has happened to you that's made your heart leap, be it in a bad, what you would consider to be a bad situation or a good situation, your heart has actually reacted in exactly the same way. Why? Because it's alive, it's vibrant with the experience of life. Guilt does not exist. Guilt is society's way of trying to set in place a control. It's society's way of trying to tell you that you don't deserve the abundant birthright that is yours. And that's not true. I'm going to share with you something I was talking to Damien about earlier today, because I think it's really important, actually, in this moment to tell you. I've been going through all sorts of energetic work myself, and I continue to do, and I've been having something which is called light body integration work. And my light body teacher sat with me today, and he spoke to me about the soul contract, which, for any of you that don't understand or have never heard of what a soul contract is, a soul contract is, I'm writing another book now, actually, which is all about the game of life and the fact that we choose games to come here to play. And your soul contract is, in effect, the game that you've chosen to play. And I was doing some energy work, which is all about, to be honest, is to do with the guilt surrounding the walking away from my husband. I don't have any guilt because I understand that it's all imperfection. But it was to do with looking at his game that he's playing, his soul contract, and what that means in relation to mine. And I had tears today because actually it was as clear as anything that for him, his whole purpose for being here is to become a beautiful father. And if I had not walked away from him for all the years we were together, he was never a hands-on father. He loved his children dearly, but he was never a hands-on father in any way. And in fact, I walked away from him, and they have become so close now, and it's become so evident today that his role, his whole purpose of being here is about embracing his children and having that life with them. So in fact, something that society would say to me, oh, feel guilty about, you know, you should be fearful of, in the very fact that I've walked away, I've facilitated him actually being able to have that closeness with his children. It's beautiful to see now. It's really beautiful to see. And, you know, there's no right or wrong here. We're here to experience. And when you understand and embrace that, you know, you can't possibly feel guilty or have fear surrounding anything because, you know, you're this beautiful, magnificent being that's far, far greater than the notion that you are a bound and limited being. Again, I'm going to throw some science at you. Science proves this. Science proves that time doesn't exist. Science proves that you are a far greater energy source than the body that you're in. I mean, I don't know if you know this, Damien, but do you know that there's Russian scientists that actually have photographs now of souls leaving bodies, which is very interesting.
Oh, wow.
They've got it under wrap and key, and then there's kind of people interested. But there's, you know, science proves that time doesn't exist. I mean, there's a guy in, it sounds like this is off the story, but it's really not. It's really, really important to answer this question. There's a guy called Dr. Todd Avakaitis, who's based out in the States, and he's a doctor in pulmonary medicine. So he's very, very, very well doctrined. And he had this experience where he was taken out of body, and he was shown a high dimensional DNA structure. And he was shown how to create time-reversed light using reversed wave particles. And he kind of came back into body, and he started trying to find someone that would help him build this time-reversed light, and everyone was thinking he was a raving lunatic, until he found a guy in Scotland who did it with him. And they built this machine, and it actually, once they fired the time, they aimed the time, the light, sorry, at these cells, sick cells, HIV cells, it reversed them back to their original healthy state. And they've been able to de-age now cells by up to 30 years. I think it was 50, actually, at the latest count, by up to 50 years now.
Wow.
There are other scientific experiments which have proved where, you know, there's a scientist who was out to actually disprove that it was possible to reverse time, and he actually had a group of people who were meditating. They had a conversation. They taped it. They put it in a tape, locked it away. 2 weeks later, they got back together, had a conversation, changed it. He went and got the tape out of the safe, and the tape had actually changed to reflect the conversation that was on that tape. And the people were flabbergasted. He tried to hide the evidence, but he hasn't been able to. Now, the reason for me saying this is, if you can understand that time does not exist, and that you can move, you can shift time, and you then understand that you are a being that is a far greater source than the body that you're within, how on earth would it be the case that you were to walk a path of a life which was completely and utterly controlled and conditioned? The two just do not go hand in hand at all. And the worthiness is about this coming back to wholeness again. It's about embracing every aspect of you that you would consider to not be worthy. So, for example, someone would... I'm not just talking about physical experience here. I'm talking about a deep sense of, you know, do I deserve this? There's a game playing out here, and you've put that in place for you to remember and to play out the roles, for you to embrace and remember that you are the most amazing and beautiful and worthy being, because actually you can only feel worthy when you have felt like you're not worthy. Because how could you possibly know that you were worthy unless you knew what unworthiness felt like? Is this making sense?
It's completely true, yeah. Like I think, like, they say the stars at night, there's no way you can see the stars without the light of the stars without the darkness behind, or the backdrop of the darkness. So just experiencing the two extremes actually gives you the ability to know both and know that they're one and the same.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, we've got a question here from Gillian. Gillian's in the United Kingdom, and Gillian wants to know, how do I get past this blankness when I have lost touch with my intuition and feel lost in the mist without direction? How do I find my quest?
Okay. That, Gillian, is exactly where I was. In the summer of 2006, I had found myself in this state of blankness for some time, really had. And it's so many people ask me this, so many people, how do I connect with my purpose? How do I know what I am? And the first thing I would say is that if you can, the first thing you need to do is to make the space for you. Because until you can start to know who you are, to connect with who you are, you can't find out what it is that you're here for. What is your mission? What is your passion? What is your purpose? And your mission, your passion, your purpose doesn't come to you by design. It comes in moments of inspiration. And those moments of inspiration are the moments that we dismiss. We're all guilty of dismissing the moments of inspiration. I can recollect two times prior to that summer when moments of inspiration came to me and I dismissed them. And yet I would say to you this, everything is perfect. The moment is always perfect. Everything that has happened up till this moment for you, because there is only one moment that exists and that's this moment of now, everything is created now. Never, never look behind you and say, I should have done this, I should have done that, because that's absolutely not the case. You are now here in this moment asking this question because right now you're at a place where you choose and you know within you that it's time for you, it's the moment for you to find your purpose. The easiest way is to take yourself away from anything and everything that would distract you and to really be quiet with yourself. If you can think about all the things that make you really happy, so for example, for me, I love being in nature, so I would love to go and sit in a forest or sit in a castle gardens are near me, in a beautiful castle gardens. So much of what I've written, what I've experienced has come when I've been so still and in those castle gardens. It doesn't come when you're busy. When your life is busy, there's no time for you. And the life being busy is literally the brain creating a distraction so that you can't listen to your heart. And your heart is speaking to you all the time. You just need to listen to it. And in order for you to do that, you must create the space for you to hear it. So find something, some space that you feel that would be really sacred for you to be alone with you. and just listen and write down anything, anything that you see, that you feel, anything that comes to you, just write it down and do not dismiss it. And believe me, I have written things that, you know, I would think, anyone would think was crazy. And the things that have validated information I've written like formulae and all sorts of stuff that, you know, you would think, well, what's that all about? Symbols and script. And because from that very moment in Dublin, I have only ever listened to my intuition. So when my intuition is screaming at me, which does all the time now, or I've learned to listen to it, that, you know, that symbol you've just seen in your mind, or this or that or the other, you know, or you've just noticed something on a bus, or you've just, I mean, how many times do you notice numbers coming at you in threes, or, you know, signs around you, or you'll hear, you know, three people tell you about the same thing or the same person. Just don't dismiss it. It's all, it's only you that's creating it for you to listen, because we are not separate, we're one. Our greater self knows exactly what it's doing, and it's brought you to this moment right now for you to find the tools and to say, okay, now I understand that, it's time for me to listen to me, to stop listening to everything that's around me, everyone and what they're saying, and start listening to me. And I'm going to honor me, and I'm going to write down, and I'm going to embrace, and I'm going to live every moment that my heart, my intuition is telling me what to do. And I'm going to have no expectation, no attachment to exactly where this is going and how this is unfolding. I'm just going to follow it and see what happens. And that would be my words for anyone. Wow. To find their sacred quest and allow their purpose to come to them. Never, never go looking. When you go looking, you're pushing against the flow. Always be very still and allow it to come to you.
That's really, really powerful advice. Now, I'll put a, sort of extending on from that question in terms of guidance, a question from Katrina in France. And Katrina wanted to know if you could actually talk about the different types of guidance that we can access to, whether it's inner guidance or the sort of logic-based guidance and also higher spiritual guidance. Do you think they are the same or are they different? That's Katrina's question.
Okay. Your steer, your udder, is your heart. If we are to look at ourselves as an energetic being, we know that we are energy. We know that we are just, the body is dense physical matter. You put it under a microscope and it's just energy. We're energy down to the microcosm. We know that. When you look at how a molecular structure grows, an atom, it grows and grows, it expands, expands, it expands. We have our dense physical body. We also have our mental body. We have our spiritual body. And we have our emotional bodies. And just because you can't see them, okay, I say to people all the time, if you're here in a multisensory body, if you were to close your eyes now and not smell and not taste and not hear and not feel, are you dead? Of course you're not dead. You're actually there very, very, very much at one with who you are in that moment. We have created a body and these senses for us to experience the game of life in the human experience. There are many experiences that we're having right now. But right now in the human experience, the greatest challenge and yet the greatest gift is to start to embrace and embody every single one of your bodies, your mental, your physical, your emotional, your spiritual body, to bring them together in a wholeness, in a oneness. Because when you do that, you then can start to embrace the entirety, the size, the magnitude of the spiritual body, if that's where you want to refer to. I refer to it as my light body, my heart, my greater self, which is part of the greater one. Now, when you talk about your guidance, we know that there is no separation. Science proves this too. There is absolutely no separation. There is only a one whole, and the whole grows and grows, much in the way that I described that molecular structure. It grows on many levels, on many dimensions. This is another long conversation, but it grows in all these ways. So needless to say, if there is only one and we are all part of the same one, every growth that every part of that one is experiencing is your knowledge, and you can access that in any moment, any moment. And so when, for example, people say, oh, you know, I think I've just seen a UFO, or I've just experienced this or that, of course they have. They're just experiencing the greater knowledge of the one, which is the universal mind. It's been, if you look at morphic resonance, morphic genesis, for example, morphic genesis, in scientific terms, it's all connected to the superstring theory. There's a Dr. Rupert Sheldrake who talks about this beautifully. And he talks about the fact that morphic genesis is the coming into being of form. So this is the way that he describes the universal oneness. And it's the random, chaotic construct of what we are. And morphic resonance is like the patterning that's overlaid over the random, chaotic construct, which is to give similarities so that you can see. So you see two people and they're so similar and yet they're different. No two people will ever be the same and yet they are. Why? Because we're all the same one energy field. And so therefore, if you can accept that and embrace that, and you can understand that you are a beautiful and unique expression of that one energy field, because only in your own unique expression can you experience and bring the growth to that whole one unified field. It's only in that expression of being able to do that. Then equally, if you can embrace and accept that, you can embrace and accept the fact that the moment that you open to this, you have access to the information and the guidance of that entire one energy source. Now, this one energy source is referred to in many different ways. It's referred to as the angelic realm, the ascended masters realm, the ET realm. You know, we've heard it described in many different ways, and they're all perfectly valid. They're all different descriptions of different unique expressions of the one. And so in terms of you being able to connect to this guidance, it's again, it goes back to just being very still and opening yourself to connecting with that. The other thing I would say, though, is it's really, really important that once you embrace and understand that you are an energetic being, is to continually find ways of working with your energy and clearing your energy. Because the personality and the ego are a great thing. That's what we've put in place to play this game. So that's the part that's holding all the patterns, the DNA molecular structure at that level, if you like. All the feelings, the guilt, the emotions, the concept that, you know, you're you know, the whole monad of victim, victimizer, all of the different parts and roles that we're playing out. If you can find a way in a practice, and there's much that you can do on this, and I'm sure Damien can give you lots of advice here. There's lots of people that can help in terms of helping you to clear your energy field, and so that you completely focus on the truth that's within you, and not on the stuff that the personality or the ego would throw at you and try and cloud the issues with. But ultimately, I guess what I'm saying is your connection with you is your greatest source of connection with the universal knowledge. And so it's so important to take yourself away for at least a period of time every single day. Everybody should just be alone with who they are, because the greatest manifestation comes from a place of being very still. If you speak to the greatest manifestors on this planet, they will all tell you the same thing, that they don't run around, they're very, very still. And it's only from that place of stillness that they create the miracles that they do. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I was speaking to a girl, a really good friend of mine who's working with me as well, and I had written notes about something that was going to we were going to work on, and we were talking, and then we realised that what we'd said, what we'd agreed, needed to change, and I picked the notes up ready to change it, and the notes had already changed on the page. My writing had already changed.
Amazing.
And the reason I'm telling you this is not to say I'm a miracle worker, because it's all of us. That's the power that we have. There is a guy right now who I've spoken to Damien about. His name is Ben Hendrickson. He's based out in Sydney. This man has been, he's had a following since the age of 6 from Tibet. He's 23 now, and he works on a dimensional level. In fact, he finds it very hard to communicate on a human level, and he works with mind maps and things like this. But he has another friend in Australia. He has watched this man open an empty wallet and pull thousands of dollars from his wallet. He's manifest instantly.
Wow.
This guy, he's been banned from every casino in Australia, because if he walks in, he just cleans the house. The house will just break. And he doesn't run or move anywhere. He doesn't advertise who he is. He doesn't go out seeking anyone. Everyone comes to him. Everybody.
Wow.
He has got years worth of clients. He's healed. He's had people come in, lay on the floor, and touch them, and they're healed. Now, I'm not professing that. It's fantastic. He has the ability to do that. I absolutely know and advocate the fact that if people are ill, it's dis-ease, and they need to remove that dis-ease, that ill at ease, and find the core symptoms in order for them to help themselves. But just to give you an example of when you really connect with you and you really be very, very still and utterly, utterly believe and trust with every essence of your being that you are the most beautiful and magnificent being that is able to create everything that you are here to create and to be completely aligned with who you are, then just watch the miracles unfold.
Well, that's a lovely message. Now, Louise, we're actually coming up to the end of our hour. The call has actually flown by. I can't believe it. Now, there are going to be lots of people on the call who have resonated with your very powerful and inspiring message this evening. And I have no doubt that it has opened a curiosity in people about the book you've written, The Sacred Quest. I have personally just spent the last 2 days reading it and literally could not put it down until I've finished it. And I was just wondering if you could share with people how they could find out more about the book you've written, The Sacred Quest, and how they can actually get a copy of it for themselves.
Yeah, sure. Well, two things really. We have an organic website where they could go and have a look at information about it, which is www.sacredquest.org.uk. But I guess more importantly is we are about to launch the book. Part of the story, I haven't really spoken much about the story, but part of the story of the book is about radical planetary changes which are to take place on the planet. And as the book evolved, so I started to understand my role in all of this. And so I have established a media group, and I understand it to be it's a completely new way of taking books to market. And not only that, we're creating a new form of book. And the first part of that is the fact that I have had an amazing young and talented musician who has channeled in music for the entire book. So the book's narrated and set to music too. And actually, we've just finished our first 40-second concept model of a new form of book entirely, which is it's narrated, I've narrated it, set to music, and it's set to computer generated imaging as well. Anyway,
wow.
We're going to launch the book globally via a web-based affiliate marketing launch, which you know about. We're starting it, it's very early stages this weekend. We're just going to start it on a smaller scale, but it's launched to go. It's planned to be very large by probably about September, October time this year. So if you wanted information about the launch, there's two places you can go to. Predominantly, I guess, go to www.thesacredquestaffiliates.com and lots of information's there. There's the opportunity to become... to join the launch series, and we're launching it with films and with emails, and I would say go to Damien.
Yeah, we'll be helping you to get the message out there.
So, and the audio book actually is not going to be, we're going to launch that a few weeks down the line, actually, after the main book and the CD. Although if people are desperate, then they can come to the organic site and buy it now. But we're mainly focusing on the book and the soundtrack for now.
Okay, great. Okay, so that literally brings us to the end of the call, Louise. I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you for sharing your wisdom and your experience, and also, I guess, to be able to stand in opposition when the whole world thinks you're crazy in pursuit of your dreams, your hopes and your aspirations, and standing true to that. And as a result, having a remarkable book to share with the world. And I have no doubt some many, many, many wonderful gifts to give to the world in the future as well.
Thank you, and ditto. Thank you. You do the same, and your readers, your listeners know that.
Now, in closing, Louise, I was just wondering, Do you have any final words of wisdom that you'd like to share with anyone who's sitting at home thinking about whether or not they should pursue their own sacred quest?
Yeah, there is one thing I'd like to say, and that is this. To bear your truth to the world takes a lot of courage, but always remember you're actually only bearing the truth to you. This book that I've written now, it gets always, I get too extreme responses to it. People either say, who is this crazy, deluded woman who, you know, not only does she believe the stuff that she's written, but she wants us to believe it too. And or otherwise, people declare it to be one of the most profoundly moving books they've ever read. Why? Because it's written from the heart, and it's driving people and forcing people to look at themselves. And you will find, no matter what your purpose, no matter what you're here to do, whichever way you're here to express it, the most important thing is to be absolutely constant and honouring of your truth, because your truth is the truth. It's not any what everyone else has to say is completely irrelevant. It's your truth. And never, never fear someone's reaction. Always embrace it and know that it's perfect, because when someone stands and throws stuff at you, and believe me, I've had it, you know what? The beautiful thing is, yeah, you hit rock bottom and the next day you get up and something extraordinary happens. And the greatest, greatest honour for you is just to honour who you are, the beauty of you are and your truth. And stick by that and watch this amazing path unfold.
Well, I wholeheartedly echo those sentiments. Excellent. Okay, so this recording of this telephone conversation will be made available on the peopleyoushouldmeet.com site tomorrow. And yeah, if you'd like to listen to this call again, if you didn't hear the whole call or you just love to listen to it again, you can download it for free. And yeah, I wish you all the well with it. Thanks once again, Louise, and thank you everyone for sharing your amazing questions this week, and I look forward to having you all on the call very soon.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks and good night.
Bye.